It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are focusing our entire show today on the public hearings held in Pittsburgh tomorrow and Friday on the EPA's sweeping regulatory changes to limit climate-altering carbon dioxide from existing power plants. This is the cornerstone of President Obama's climate action plan. Joining us to discuss the plan is Joylette Portlock. She is president of Communitopia and creator of the Don't Just Sit There, Do Something About Climate Change web series. Joylette, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks.
Also with us is Kim Glass. She's executive director of the Blue Green Alliance. Kim, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And I want to begin with a question of jobs. One of the major arguments that we hear from the supporters of the coal and, for that matter, the gas industry is when it comes to environmental concerns, you have to factor into the equation jobs. Coal industry supporters are saying that these proposed EPA emissions reductions will result in 600,000 job losses. Can clean energy create enough jobs to offset this? Kim or Joylette, I'll toss that up to either of you.
Sure, I'll take that question. As the executive director of the Blue Green Alliance, we are a coalition of both labor and environmental groups, some very powerful advocates in Washington and in the states, about this belief that Americans don't have to choose between good jobs and a clean environment. This is why we support the Clean Power Plan, because we believe the Clean Power Plan provides opportunities for job creation around energy efficiency, renewable energy. There's been a variety of metrics that have come to the forefront about what could the Clean Power Plan do in terms of creating jobs just in energy efficiency. And a recent statistic that I just come across is that at least 600,000 jobs could be created by ramping up energy efficiency to meet compliance of the rule. So I think there, as part of this coalition, which is broad and diverse and a very powerful and effective voice, that we're looking for what are some job-creating opportunities under the rule, both for renewable energy and ramping up energy efficiency.
And I guess one of the questions that comes to mind is, you know, here we are in Pittsburgh in the heart of coal country in western Pennsylvania, and we know that traditionally coal, and certainly you can look at evidence that measures less than desirable impact to the environment that that comes from the carbon emissions that coal-fired plants produce. That having been said, the coal industry has traditionally created jobs. This is a coal-rich environment that we live in. So is there enough wind and sun power, you know, and if these are the industries that will create the jobs to make up for the loss of 600,000, where do you put those windmills? Where are we going to see solar installations? And in what ways do those industries create jobs? Joylette.
Well, I would start by saying that actually the coal industry has been reducing jobs for the past several decades as, you know, automation becomes more common. So it's not necessarily that this is an industry that is going to be growing and creating more jobs over the near-time future. But in regards to renewable energy and our capacity, I mean, I have a friend who likes to point out that every leaf in Penn's woods is a solar collector. We have many more resources here in the renewable field than people commonly think of. Solar, as well as wind, and given our industrial past, the public health benefits are also very great. There has been at least one study out of Carnegie Mellon University in recent years that showed that Pennsylvania is one of the best states in the nation for building out wind and solar. So I think when you look at the potential in renewable energy as well as in energy efficiency, we really see a great potential here.
Well, we've all seen the windmills. We've seen the solar panels. What do the people do? What kind of jobs are there for human beings?
So I think they're beyond wind and solar, which can be a significant opportunity for job creation, and also creating the inputs for wind and the steel that goes into them, the aluminum. Those are downstream jobs that are going to support a lot of workers here in this country. But also in energy efficiency, I think that's the low-hanging fruit that not enough people are talking about. We have industrial energy efficiency. What can you do to retrofit big energy-intensive industries? And what can you do on the residential level, both for businesses and homes? And that's a job-creating measure. And there's a lot of homes in this country that can be much more energy efficiency. And just by ramping up our energy efficiency, states like Pennsylvania will be able to meet these goals. You have an energy efficiency standard here in the state. You have a renewable energy standard here in the state. So just ramping those up, Pennsylvania will be able to comply with this rule. And it's important that people are engaged in this process about developing a state implementation plan with the governor in order to keep jobs in mind, both for worker transition when coal-fired plants are being retired, but also in order to create job-creating opportunities in these other sectors.
And Kim, you're saying that there will be, in fact, hundreds of thousands of jobs resulting from this?
Yes, I absolutely believe that, and the data shows that. And so I think we need to reframe this debate about jobs, that I think that there's a significant opportunity to create jobs here in Pennsylvania and across the United States. And now is the time to engage in developing a state implementation plan that works for the people of Pennsylvania.
And, of course, the environmental impetus behind this is global warming or climate change. And certainly there is an abundance of scientific evidence out there that proves that human beings and industry here on Earth is contributing to this problem. However, there are those who deny that climate change is caused by humans. Let's go to the phones, 412-246-2002. We have Jay on the North Side who would like to join the conversation. Jay, you are on the air. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. You know, the model of global warming, scientifically, you know, it's a good model, but I believe that's just what it is a model. And I don't think it can actually be proven. I would take you back to a couple months ago on Science Friday. The commentator had two of the foremost scientists in industry and in government on and tried desperately to paint them into a corner, saying that this is an issue that needs to be dealt with right now, and neither would. And that really changed my thinking on global warming. And with that being said, I think it's very unfair to, you're going to cost us jobs by the new EPA ruling, and then why is it that Russia, China, the Soviet Union, the other industrial nations, they're not chipping in and contributing. Therefore, the American people are going to spend significantly more money. We are going to lose jobs, and our status in the world is going to change because of a theory.
You're saying there could be an economic catastrophe as a result of this. Now, Kim Glass just articulated how the creation of opportunities within the clean energy sector will actually, in fact, create jobs and mitigate that loss. I will let either Kim or Joylette Portlock respond to your concerns and your skepticism about the global warming argument. Joylette, What is the evidence that's out there? What do you feel someone like Jay should know?
Well, I think that the most important thing that really everyone should know and hasn't gotten out there quite as widely as it should be is the overwhelming weight of the scientific evidence supporting man-made climate change. We're in a situation where 97% of the scientists publishing on this topic agree that climate change is real and is man-made. We don't have a credible scientific society in the entire world saying otherwise. We have so much information about this at this point, the studies that have been done over decades. And what we see again and again is that the global temperature is increasing, and by far and away, the most likely culprit is the massive amounts, billions of tons of greenhouse gas pollution that we're putting into the environment.
The emissions hold in the gases that harm the environment and also are increasing our temperatures. And there certainly are models and charts that show that there has been an increased temperature on the Earth and that it has been steadily increasing over, what is it, the last century?
Yeah, just about.
So while renewable energy certainly seems to be the wave of the future, let's face it, Pennsylvania, this region, and in fact many parts of the United States are it seems doubtful that they're going to be able to go 100% renewable tomorrow. So what is the best course of action in the meantime, and how serious do we need to get about energy efficiency and simply consuming less energy?
Well, if I can build on that, I think that we've got this scientific consensus here. I think we need to move past, and this is part of what we do at Communitopia, is try to move past this this framing of the debate or the invisible scientific debate, because the scientific community is not debating this, but to move past the public conversation of the world is doomed and it's all your fault, with the environmentalists seeming to say that to everyone, and just say, okay, we've got a problem. Let's roll up our sleeves and figure out the best way to fix it together. When you talk about energy efficiency, that is a great place. That's the low-hanging fruit. And I think it's important that in this new rule from EPA that energy efficiency is built in as part of the way that we will achieve these reductions in carbon pollution. That's also in line with what the international community has been saying in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports that come out about how best to tackle this problem. Energy efficiency, both within the production, on the production side, as well as on the demand side, on the consumer side, are very important pieces of this.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Keith in Brentwood, who wants to join the conversation. Keith, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Joylette Portlock and Kim Glass.
Thank you very much for taking my call. And I don't really have a question. I just want to make a statement that a lot of the entrenched natural resources companies, like your natural gas, coal, and oil, have such a tight grip on the economy, and it really comes down to, I feel personally, in a matter of greed, that companies like this are not going to give up the lock that they have on those. So green resources moving forward have a real fight on their hands. No matter how much in the right they are and how much science they have behind them, I just wanted to say that that is the true struggle right there, and it really does come down to money. And I will end with that and take your comments off air. Thank you.
Well, you raise an interesting aspect of this conversation, Keith, and thank you for your call. And Kim Glass, as we look at this issue, and again, you are executive director of the Blue Green Alliance. You're obviously someone who's very much interested in renewable energy and in what is referred to as clean energy. Certainly, it's cleaner than coal and gas, but we are a coal-producing state. And we do have those considerable natural gas reserves. So what does this equation look like going forward? I mean, are coal and gas going away with what the EPA is proposing? Are you saying that they should go away? Or are they part of a broad energy picture in the future that is incorporated into renewable energy?
Look, it's very clear that, in the states like Pennsylvania, coal is still a significant industry in this state. But going into the future, and I think this is the important part that people need to understand as part of the EPA Clean Power Plan, there is a roadmap that is just a broad outline to give to a state of how to get there. And it's up to the state to really decide how are they going to meet this target. What are they going to do? Are they going to put most of their efforts behind renewable energy? Are they going to spend most of their efforts on energy efficiency and ensuring energy-intensive industries come more fully into compliance? So it's a recognition that the federal government has left it up to the states and the stakeholders in that state to decide the pathway forward.
All right,
not a cookie-cutter approach.
Okay, well, then this may be too simplistic of a question, but if energy is a pie, I mean, everybody wants a part of the pie. The gas industry does, the coal industry, and maybe they won't be around forever, or maybe they will. You're factoring in, and Joylette is obviously a big proponent of solar and wind. So what does that pie look like? What should it look like? We have solar, we have renewable energy, coal and gas.
Well, I think that if you look at what we've heard a lot about that other countries aren't doing as much, but I think that's really not true. I think other countries are doing a lot, and we can look at how they're listening to the science. This,
but
the
obviously,
science
China
is saying,
a problem, and China, and who knows where Russia's head is really at? I mean, let's face it. With all that's going on in the world, we have to wonder, don't we?
China has its own issues, but I think that we need to not make a scapegoat of China and look at how much positive action they are taking, as we heard in the first segment. But the scientific consensus is that we need to see globally an 80% reduction in carbon pollution by the year 2050 if we want to avoid the worst effects of climate change. So that means that we are going to need to figure out how to make that transition work. And I think that back to the caller's question about costs and money. I mean, I think that one of the most important parts of this plan is that it takes the externality of the environmental damage that is caused by our production of carbon pollution and builds it into an incentive for industries to figure some of these problems out, to clean up or to help us in that transition.
Go ahead.
There's, you know, the other point the caller was making was with respect to job loss. And I just want to underscore the fact that the Blue-Green Alliance strongly supports a transition plan for workers who may be in the midst of a transition because of job loss. But the other point is on job loss, there's a real opportunity here. I don't think people have really studied to the fullest extent when you have extreme weather patterns, what that can do to facilities. Facilities, you know, can lose their power. Mills can remain idle. Work is not getting done.
Economic
it's a horrible economic
industry, which impacts jobs. And before we wrap this up, I want to get to Kim on Twitter, who asks, how can we use the Clean Power Plan to bring back more good union jobs to our region? You know, Kim, your work with the Blue-Green Alliance brings together labor in the form of unions to work alongside environmentalists. Strange bedfellows, or do the twain meet?
Actually, it's a great coalition. We are a very strong coalition, and we look at ways to create really good, high-paying jobs, quality jobs, growing union jobs in these sectors. I think this will be very much part of our discussion in the state implementation plan process of working with local unions on the ground to figure out where that we can move the dial and increase those good-paying jobs.
Kim Glass is Executive Director of the Blue-Green Alliance. Joylette Portlock is President of Communitopia and creator of the Don't Just Sit There, Do Something About Climate Change web series. Ladies, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, a conversation with two members of the medical profession about the health implications of the EPA's plan. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.